The Guardian. Football Weekly with James Richardson.
Today, goodbye Tevez, bad boy Balotelli, as Man City climb up the table. Where does the future lie for the angry Argentine? Elsewhere, Spurs, Chelsea. Drogba proves better than Gomez at handling, but Brazilian keeper has the last laugh in tie at White Hart Lane. And Newcastle, Liverpool, like Ebenezer Scrooge, can't handle the Carroll in exciting St. James's win. Abroad, there's Sid on the line with another big win for Barca. Call them the Qatar heroes. While in Serie A, Milan make mincemeat of Bolognese to go 6 points clear. All that, plus posts and more in Football Weekly, shouldn't take long. Excellent. Hello, everyone. An eclectic panel.
Is that a good thing?
It is a good thing, I think, Barney. I think it's nice to freshen things up. Yep. And hello, Barney Roney.
Good morning.
Good morning. Paolo Bandini.
Also good morning.
Also good morning. And Jonathan Wilson.
Morning.
Good morning to you, Jonathan. Exciting chitter and chatter as we prepared for blast-off. Barney, I know you're here really to rant and rage about big money clubs. Do you want to should we just go straight into that?
I wouldn't say I...
Are you wound really up enough for it, or do you want to simmer a bit more before we unleash you?
I had some views.
Tevez, is that what's got your goat?
Well, it's a funny kind of story, isn't it?
It really is. There he was, doing a little video piece about how he was fully committed to honouring his contract, and a day later he'd signed a written transfer request.
It's just funny. You know, clubs have new kinds of problems these days, our new kinds of clubs. Problems at Chelsea when it turns out that you have to continually rebuild your very expensive side, and that's going to have to come out of your own pocket rather than out of your revenues. This is a new kind of problem which they don't seem to have completely kept up to speed with. And then problems at Man City, like you might end up signing players who are quite interested in money and just a little bit mercenary. I mean, Tevez is a ridiculous figure in many ways. I mean, I've described him before as being a little bit like a children's entertainer. He kind of, for a price, he'll put on a show and make the party swing and appear to offer kind of heart and soul.
Mm.
But then there's
a valuable
always,
profession,
there's always another job around the corner, isn't there? And he has to go.
Is this definitely about money?
What do you think? What else might it be about?
Well, certainly the initial suggestion when all the reports coming through was that this was more to do with the fact that his... Although I then find it strange that
he
shortly after
he started
getting
children
linked to teams in Europe. But yeah, it was all about he's got family in Argentina. He obviously, his daughters at the moment, I'm not entirely sure of the reason there, but aren't able to relocate to Europe. And he's unhappy about his family situation.
Hands up who thinks he's going to sign for a club in Argentina.
Well, nobody
thinks.
The reason his daughters aren't here is because the mother of the daughters is no longer Tevez's partner. And Tevez's brother is also serving a 16-year term for armed robbery.
Mm.
So, again, that's a reason why he might want to be back, kind of helping the family by...
But do you think he is going
to... No, I don't think he will go back, but I think it's a huge problem that he has this great pull back to Buenos Aires.
But
I'm not sure he's going to be happy anywhere. But there are places more similar to Buenos Aires, more culturally similar to Argentina than Manchester. Now, he should have known that, given he was at United for 2 years.
But yeah, I don't really buy
Spain
that.
Or something.
26-year-old footballer who's
would
keen
culturally
to move.
Be more similar to Argentina. He might feel slightly more comfortable there.
But he's also been asking to have his contract extended and is saying he's not happy that they... I mean, you can't have it both ways. You either
but
want to go back to Argentina.
There's claim and counterclaim at the moment.
You don't.
No, but I think there's... I mean, I agree with you. I don't think it's simply homesickness. I think the money issue is an issue, but... Eventually, people are going to realise, well, actually, you can't go higher than City in terms of getting money. That's as far as you get. There are no more worlds to conquer.
I was trying to think who might sign him in this country. The only club I could think of who would be really good to sign Carlos Tevez and who could afford him is QPR. If I was Lakshmi Mittal, sign Tevez. You'll get promoted. He'll be a great marquee player for
right.
you. You could afford him.
Mm. It is a few kilometres closer to Buenos Aires as well.
There's lots of quite nice Argentinian restaurants
and
in
connections
Islington.
A bit as well. Yeah, no, there are. Yeah.
QPR down to Heathrow is
yeah.
what, an hour?
Yeah.
Then 16-hour flight.
Yeah.
Whereas in Manchester, you're talking 3 hours to Heathrow.
Exactly.
Alongside
exactly.
Rob Hulse, could probably work quite well.
Because we've been sort of quite dismissive of the Argentina thing. I mean, obviously, Robinho went back there last season to Brazil. He went to Brazil in the middle of his career. He's a young player earning similar amounts of money.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, are we dismissing this because we just don't think Tevez would want to do that? Are we dismissing it because of the Kio Drabchian and you think it's going to be about money for him? Or are we just saying that we think all of this is a hoax and it's all about money? Because I don't see that it's that unthinkable that he could go back there for a year in the same way that Robinho went back to Brazil.
I'm sure the homesickness is genuine. I just don't think it's the only thing.
Mm.
And I also, I can't imagine possibly how any Argentinian club could come close to affording him. I mean, you know, Riquelme is getting $1 million a year for 5 years, and that has pushed Boca to the brink to get that deal. So if Tevez is on $250,000 a week, £250,000 a week, as we
tax
believe he is.
Tax-free? How is that? That's
well, it's not tax-free, it's just City will pay the tax.
Oh, I see, right,
But after tax. Here's the issue without having his ear, is ultimately, it's not like he's going to be in a position where he can't afford to live on a lower wage for a year. So without having his ear, we don't know if it really is about the homesickness, then presumably he could decide that he could just take a lower salary for a year.
But there's the issue with Jurabchin, the other agents, you don't know what deal he's got with them.
Well, that is the issue. Is this about Jurabchin? That's sort of what I'm asking.
If you talk to various agents who know Jurabchin, they say one of his policies is to kick hard when things are going well, whereas most agents kick hard when things are going badly. But he does it the other way around because he thinks that's when clubs are most likely to give a pay rise.
Agents need players to move. They need players to renegotiate. That's how they make money. Mm. He's never in a million years going to be advising him to see out his contract at Man City. You know, he's got a small stable of people and he needs them to have high-profile moves.
Can I ask two questions? One would be, do you think that Tevez will be at Eastlands after the January transfer window? And two, in his absence, do they have anyone else who can bend the balloons into fancy animal shapes?
You don't think he's seen Wayne Rooney doing exactly the same thing and thought, hang on, I'm a bit like Wayne Rooney. Yeah. People, maybe I could do that as well.
He's better than Wayne Rooney at the moment. 33 goals in 50 Premier League games. It's something preposterous.
It's about one every two games. Yeah. I don't know if that's better than Wayne Rooney over the last couple of seasons. I mean, last year he scored
48% of City's goals before Saturday.
Mm.
But do you think City will have a problem signing another striker? I suppose one...
Do they not have enough talent as it is?
Well, they've got Adebayor, but he's not been the same.
Balotelli's bonkers, Adebayor's bonkers.
But they can't get players to go there. Is that the problem? I mean, why can't they just sign somebody who's not mad?
Right, why would that be? Balotelli, I didn't think he was that bad. Everyone's ranting and raging about how he threw another scene, etc. He seemed quite mild by normal.
Yeah, I think
kicks. I don't think his shirts were thrown to the ground
by any stretch. It is his most explosive performance in that sense. But I do think that this is a taste of what Inter saw a lot of last year, which is that he's perfectly capable of really not being involved in a game for very long stretches. And even in a game where he's being like that, he might score a goal from 25 yards. That's very much the nature of him. He's a young player who's very fast and very capable of being very physical, but he doesn't use his speed and his physicality for most of a game. Most of a game he can strut around pouting. And this is fundamentally why I was a bit wary of it as a signing at the time. I think he's a phenomenally talented player. And I think as and when he gets his act together, which I've been saying for a while, I can imagine it being like Nicolas Anelka, where he suddenly wakes up and is 25 and thinks to himself, hang on, if I don't finally pull my finger out, I'm going to waste a lot of my career. But he is. This is absolutely what we've been seeing from a while, this sort of strutting, pouting performance where he doesn't do a lot. And that doesn't mean he can't do something in that game, like I say, because in fact he had at least one really good goal-scoring chance in amongst it all yesterday, didn't he?
But that's surely only part of the issue, that if he has to be taken off, so he's sent off, and you know this has already happened once this season, the game against West Brom, where Mancini was trying to take him off, didn't get him off fast enough before he was sent off, admittedly, in that instance, slightly harshly. But you know, his whole demeanour in that game was of a man who was about to be sent off. Mm-hmm. And so the referee, I think, reacted to that as much as the incident. The same thing was happening on Saturday. And Yaya Toure, very obviously, was spending most of that game trying to calm him down. Well, Yaya Toure should be focusing on just playing his own game. He shouldn't have to take another player under his wing.
Mm.
You know, you can't have liabilities like that.
I do think it's worth saying, because obviously it's a neat tie with what we've just been talking about, that certainly the reports in Italy, since he's been here, have suggested that at least hinted that he is a little bit homesick, and he's clearly a kid in the way he acts. He admits to acting like a kid and saying he has the mentality of a kid. For all that he, you know, kicked off a few times at Inter last season, he didn't give off the impression of a player who was desperate to get out of Inter, actually. He was quite, you know, whilst there was all the links with Milan and everything, actually there was seemed to be quite a lot of reluctance coming out of the quotes that he was saying, the things he was saying at the time when he left Inter. Reluctance to leave Milan as a city. I don't know, again, if he obviously would have rather be at AC Milan is the impression you get, but I don't think he was especially keen to be leaving Milan as a city. And I certainly don't think he was keen to be leaving Italy as a country, for all that is made of the racism issue over there. I actually think he's always said he feels very Italian. He's quite comfortable in Italy. And I don't think he really felt ready for this move. But yes, the money was put under his nose. Obviously, he's got Mino Raiola as an agent who, of course, was keen to make as much money as he could. And I do think that he himself was a little bit pushed into this one.
But right. I've got sympathy if he's homesick. I mean, I that's fair enough to be homesick, and the club should do everything they can to support him. But Tevez is homesick, and Tevez still plays properly.
Yeah,
he still doesn't get himself into daft situations.
No, but he still screams at Mancini when he's taken off as a sub, which, as somebody pointed out yesterday, you can see how that would have an effect on a young player in the team. If they see the captain behaving that way, it's not surprising that Balotelli gets the hump.
Absolutely, that's one incident as he's going off at the end of the game. It's not persistently through the game from the start.
It's not the only incident, though. I don't understand why Tevez has released this statement raging against executives.
Well, it's interesting. He is having a go at Gary Cook. I mean, he's picked the right target. He's picked a man that everybody regards as being a bit of a joke.
Producer Ben suggests that his issue with Man City directors is the fact that that video interview saying that he really liked to stay at Manchester for a long time was actually recorded a long time before it was released, and it was released just after he'd written the transfer request.
Well, how long ago though? I mean, if he's saying, "Oh, I recorded that a month ago,
2 weeks
and
ago,
and I've since changed my mind." I mean, if you say you want to stay somewhere,
argument falls to the ground.
That's meant to have a longer sell-by date than 2 weeks. Like, yeah, that was 2 weeks ago. I no longer want to stay for the rest of my career.
What happened in 2 weeks?
Yeah. Can Adam Johnson play up front?
Potentially, yes. I think he's better on the flank. I think he's a great cross of the ball. But as Michael Cox has said recently, there's a lot of examples of the central winger, Ashley Young being the one he picked out.
There you go. Great minds think alike.
He makes that lovely run from the right, doesn't he, Johnson? He's done it several times. Yeah. And the pass from, was it Silva for the goal? Just brilliant. I mean, I'd leave him out there. I think it's really nice because he can come inside and finish with his left foot.
Right. And who would you have in the middle once Tevez is gone and Balotelli's whatever he's done?
I'll go out and sign whoever currently the best striker in the world is, because I've got endless money.
All right, then. Shall we move on from Man City and their more money, more problems? Who should we talk about next? Poor old Chelsea, eh? How about that? Now, they've dropped to fourth. They're now 5 games without a win, but Carlo Ancelotti says that effectively their season restarts here. Chelsea are back.
Well, yeah, the next couple of games are crucial, obviously, aren't they? I mean, it is true.
Did it look like the old Chelsea to you, Jonathan?
At times, the second half, yeah. I mean, I think yesterday's game, taken in isolation, you wouldn't think anything of it. If they'd gone into that game on the back of, you know, 4 wins and a draw, then you'd think, oh, well, it's a decent point away from home, a difficult place to go. They played pretty well in the second half. They could have won it with a late penalty. But the problem is that comes after 5 games where they've struggled. And so it looks like 2 more points dropped.
Mm.
And if United win against Arsenal tonight, suddenly there's a gap opening up and suddenly there's pressure on Chelsea. Things are already starting to fray. Fraying plus pressure is never a good thing.
Mm. Speaking of mild-mannered footballers, Didier Drogba, interesting afternoon for him. Apparently he was railing against Ancelotti when Ancelotti suggested he might like to come on as a sub. And then, of course, he scored one goal, somewhat fortuitously, and then didn't cover himself in glory from the penalty spot.
Yeah, I mean, it's tempting to read a lot into somebody missing a penalty. It's funny how often players who come on as a sub miss penalties, isn't it? I mean, I wouldn't have had him taking it personally, but
he seemed very intent on taking it himself, which I guess wouldn't have argued with him
in the circumstances. Mm.
Frank Lampard didn't seem very keen on taking it either, so it's not like he had a fight on his hands. I mean, I think it's interesting, you know, you can have a go at him for missing the penalty, but ultimately it was his knockdown that created the penalty. It was his strength that got him goal side of Dawson to then have Gomez bundle it into the net. So obviously, you know, you can't knock him too much. In the same way that I think, you know, it's funny, isn't it, how Gomez gets to be the hero of the piece all of a sudden when obviously he messed up the goal. But actually also, I think what will get lost in that, they'll go, oh, villain to hero because he gave away a goal but then he saved a penalty. The penalty only happened because he clattered, you know, was it Kalou or was it Ramirez? Now I can't remember.
Ramirez.
It was Ramirez. So you know, it's sort of double villain, and then he managed to sort of save a little bit of face at the end, really.
Mm. Good to see Lampard back after 3 months out. Spurs, well, if this point is a, you can read good things into it from Chelsea's point of view, what about from Spurs' point of view? They haven't kept a clean sheet since the opening day of the season. And this was a game they were in control of, no, in the first half?
The first half they were in control of it. I think second half, Chelsea came back. I think, again, your Spurs, given their record against Chelsea, a 1-1 draw for them isn't a bad result, especially given they conceded the penalty in the last minute. So I think, you know, in the wider context of a season, I think Spurs look at that as a decent point. I mean, you're right, at half-time they'd have thought they were nailed on to win it. But
I was just going to go back to the Drogba thing quickly, which I know is taking us back, but the it was an interesting point raised by Zonal Markings, Michael Cox, on his blog, was that actually this is exactly starting Drogba on the bench and bringing him on like that, having started with an Elkham out front, was exactly what Chelsea did when they beat Manchester United last season. So it's not sort of something that Ancelotti hasn't done before and very effectively. But obviously, I think that the context of recent weeks perhaps gives it a slightly different
context. It's a bit like Mike Brearley leaving Bob Willis on the boundary to field for the first few overs of the Australian run chase at Headingley, so,
Yeah.
Wind him up.
Bowling him, both of them in three over spells, calling him the sidestep queen, apparently, because of the way he ran into the...
Is that right?
They called him, it was just winding him up. I mean, in retrospect, a masterstroke.
Drogba's descent, I didn't see this myself. Was it particularly
vicious?
Sorry,
what's that got to do with you both of them?
Well, on a tangential note, but did he... I didn't see this, but it sounded quite tasty. And I was a bit hungry for gossip.
Drogba is Chelsea's problem. I mean,
but did he have a go at Carlo? Well, our chum, Fadley Carlo?
You know, maybe. Maybe if we...
Did you see it?
Go through the...
Did anyone see it? I didn't see it, but I saw reports that he'd had a pop at... Yeah. When he told him to come on, he kind of sneered at him in that...
He always looks a bit like that, doesn't
he? One was very similar, I'm sure he has.
Yeah,
fine.
All right,
fine. I'll take 8 for 41.
Yeah, exactly. You know, look what he did to Willis. Willis was in a, he was in a trance by the time he was unleashed in that second innings.
Please, Ben, make it stop. right. Okay. Good. Newcastle Liverpool 3-1. As Toon Toon comments, if Pardew keeps this up, he'll be getting the sack. quite an easy debut in some ways for Pardew, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was great. But I mean, he must have said something to the players to make them... I mean, you know, you didn't know how that was going to go at all. He seems to, like, for all the slight comedy of his own, his sort of manner, he seems to have handled it really well in his first few days. I mean, the press conference, it's impossible. I mean, what's he supposed to say? And he has been very kind of somber about the whole thing. He hasn't, he wasn't doing a lap of honour after the game. Well, he may have done, but it wasn't particularly remarked on. Yeah,
but I thought his post-match press on Sky, I thought was brilliant. He said, yeah, there's a couple of things we worked on, we put into practice, but basically this is what was going on before. This isn't me, this is the players.
Yeah.
Which I think was exactly the right thing to say, not trying to claim credit for something that...
Do you think he can carry on doing that all season? So, well, this is Chris Hughton. You know, I made that, but it was all to do with Chris
Hughton. Well, Harry did that all his first season, blaming the whole thing on Ramos.
But having Barton and Nolan back, that made a bit of a difference as well.
Jay Barton, I mean, I suspect you're going to come onto this anyway. But again, after the match, he was great, saying, "Yeah, this is for Paul Barron and for Chris Hughton," and talking about how the dressing room's together and this was the players doing one for the old boss. And then you have all that nonsense, all the gesturing at Fernando Torres during the game. I mean, I don't think it's a particularly serious thing, but at the same time, why? Why? Why would he bother? What,
you know,
why?
It's just one nudge from a Norwegian winger away from losing it, no?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, what he was gesturing at Torres, I'm sure it's the kind of thing that's said in matches all the time, but if it's said in matches, it doesn't get picked up on telly.
Yeah.
You just thought Barton, with his knowledge of CCTV and things, would have been aware of.
But can I say, the defending in that game was appalling, wasn't it? I mean, it was fun and everything. Did you see the defending for the Liverpool goal and it hit Sol Campbell on the back of the head? I mean, Sol Campbell is hilarious. I mean, he looks like someone's...
I like the long ball over the middle where he attempted to clear the ground to stop it, but yeah.
He seems to be constantly waggling his arms and legs in every direction simultaneously and then hurling himself onto the ground.
501 Premier League appearances, though.
Yeah, well, you can't take it away from him.
Him. Hodgson's only won one game of his last 27 away from home.
That's not very good, is it?
It's not good, is it?
There was a rumour late last night, wasn't there, that he'd resigned.
Yeah.
But that turned out to be...
But did you hear
malicious.
What that was sparked by?
What was sparked?
It was a Twitter thing from Ryan Babel saying he'd been at a CEO meeting. And people thought it meant a CEO meeting with John Henry and everything. It was actually him being the CEO of his own record label. And this sparked this whole kind of Twitter frenzy.
Have they dropped Hodgson then, the record label?
I don't think they're ever signing him. I think that's a tragedy of the whole thing.
He looks increasingly frazzled, doesn't he, Hodgson?
Well, that whole rubbing his eyes thing, it just looked the man out of control.
He looks like an incredibly
death,
angry...
Which is very sad, because I like him. I think he's very good, but maybe just not quite a match for Liverpool.
No, his head is on the verge of exploding, isn't it? It's all too much.
That's it for part one. In a second, Sid Lowe and much more continental fun.
Hello, James. How you doing?
Hi, Sid. How are you?
I'm all right, thanks. How are you?
That's great news. I'm very well. So much to talk about with you, as ever. Quick question to begin. Are the Spanish, the big clubs in Spain very excited about the Carlos Tevez's want-away declaration from Man City?
I wouldn't go quite so far as to say very excited, but it's been picked up upon, and of course it ties in very nicely with Mourinho's constant complaining that he needs another centre-forward. Mourinho actually said this in the summer. He was talking about the fact that he, as far as he was concerned, only had Karim Benzema and Gonzalo Higuain. He said, look, this is okay, but if one of them gets injured, we will have to end up praying that nothing else goes wrong, because two centre-forwards simply isn't enough. Now, of course, one of them is injured now. That's Gonzalo Higuain. The initial, the initial opinion from the doctor was that he might be out for 2 or 3 months and he'd have to go for an operation because he's got what's essentially a very serious slip disc. Another second opinion has said that possibly a conservative course of treatment means he'll only be out for a couple of weeks. So Madrid are waiting to see what the final verdict is on Higuain, but Mourinho would definitely like another striker. So, of course, Carlos Tevez suddenly becomes a logical option. What I don't know, James, and you'll probably be able to tell me better, is whether Tevez really wants to go to Spain. Isn't this all about him going back to Argentina?
Yes, and no. In the meantime, Sid, what happened to the big two in the Liga? Did they win by any chance this weekend?
Oh, you cynic. Yes, they did win by any chance this weekend. And guess what? Cristiano Ronaldo and Leo Messi both got goals. But I think Ronaldo might have finally broken the agreement with Messi. I was starting to get the feeling last weekend that Ronaldo and Messi are actually taking the piss out of us, that they're in cahoots, that they speak to each other before the weekend's games and go, so, how many should we get this weekend? Two? Yeah, all right then, two. This weekend, Ronaldo got one, and Messi broke the rules and went and got two. And they were two brilliant, brilliant goals as well, and Ronaldo's goal was pretty tasty as well.
Yeah, Messi's, was it the one where he drifts past four players and then just bangs it past into the opposite corner?
It's brilliant because he runs absolutely horizontally across the penalty area. It looks like he's just kind of running across the penalty area for the fun of it. He doesn't sort of go round people, but he goes past, I think it's four defenders and the goalkeeper, and then just turns and cuts it back into the other corner. It's similar-ish. You remember that very, very famous George Best goal, where he runs kind of diagonally across the area and then finishes it in the other corner for Man United. I'm not sure who it's against, years and years ago. But it's better, basically. Leo Messi, just unbelievable. Barcelona's record now is frightening, and I saw so many good stats last night. And it really is hard now to argue against the claim that they might just be the best side we've ever seen.
26 goals scored without reply?
Yeah, 26-0. Their aggregate score over the last six games, 26-0. Victor Valdes last night broke their record for the amount of minutes he went without conceding a goal. Leo Messi has now scored, oh, crikey, I've forgotten what it was. I think I'm right in saying 41 goals for Barcelona in this calendar year. Yesterday, Xavi Hernandez completed 127 passes and wasn't even on the pitch for the whole game. He went off after 67 minutes. Barcelona, according to Opta, and this one I really do like, yesterday completed more passes than any game since Opta started collecting statistics.
The best team we've ever seen.
I think there's definitely an argument for that.
Can I just point out they're not currently the best team in Europe because they're not European champions?
That's a functional argument, isn't it? They haven't won the European Cup, so they're not the best team.
But that's
Europe.
Quite an important way of judging who the best team is.
They were the European champions the year before.
But if we're going to talk about being the best team ever, like you might want to start with being European champions.
No, I slightly disagree with this because I think the nature of the Champions League now has made it much easier to win your domestic league and much harder to win the European competition. So I think,
If
you're the best team ever, it doesn't matter.
Let's define terms. People define best team ever by what they won, by the football they're playing, by the performances they're putting in. If it's by what they won, this is the same Barcelona team that 2 years, the season before last, won everything there was to win, everything there was to win. All three trophies, then went on to win the World Club Cup and the European Super Cup. Last season, they conveniently overlooked, they went to Milan and lost to Inter Milan, having been on a coach for 18 hours in the build-up.
The best team ever doesn't worry about that. That's the kind of thing.
So they lost in the Champions League semi-final, and they were knocked out with a Boyan goal that was disallowed in the last minute that it shouldn't have been, so they would have gone through to the final. Now, it is definitely true, and I'm not going to deny this for a minute, that the season before, they probably shouldn't have reached the Champions League final because they were extremely fortunate with a refereeing against Chelsea. In fact, more than fortunate that Chelsea were completely robbed. But that's two league titles in a row, a European semi-final off the back of having won it all the season before. The players in this side are the players who led Spain to the World Cup final. Leo Messi is, I think, without doubt, the best player in the world. Has anyone produced a better individual performance than the one against Real Madrid a couple of weeks ago, 5-0? That's the most expensive football team in history, the current Real Madrid one. I think there's definitely an argument for saying if you say they're not the best team ever because they aren't currently the holders of all three trophies. Well, they were a year ago. It's the same team. Last year, circumstance conspired against them in one of them.
The most expensive team now is always the most expensive team ever. It doesn't mean beating that Real Madrid team means there's something particularly special about you. But I mean, you know, Real Madrid in the 1950s, didn't they win the European Cup 5? I mean, they probably went to coaches' places and stuff like that as well.
But Real Madrid in the 50s didn't win the league 5 times in a row. So yeah, you're picking and choosing your competitions, and I think the European Cup now is harder to win than it was back in the 50s.
Yeah, well, Barcelona is certainly testament to harder to win.
Paolo's examining his knuckles.
I'm saying
menace in his eyes.
I
come on, Paolo.
Oh, I'm clearly having
Sacchi Milan.
Yeah, come on, Milan.
Yay, let's rumble.
1994.
Well, I do think you're always, when you're talking about Milan best evers, you're going to get in a slightly futile conversation because clearly I haven't been watching football for the last 120 years. Therefore, best team ever. How am I supposed to know?
All right then, but I know what you're saying.
Well, there's
Sid.
An alternative argument, ooh, which is okay. Then let's offer up someone else who's better than this Barcelona team.
Yeah.
Well, I've just written a piece for an Indian magazine in which I kind of make the case that Barcelona are one of the greatest ever, and I came up with a short list of 6 others who could conceivably...
Have we heard of any of the others?
Yes, I think Real Madrid in the 50s, we've already mentioned.
Right, okay, good.
Ajax in the early 70s.
Mm-hmm.
Hungary from 50 to 54.
Right.
West Germany from 72 to 76.
So national teams you've gone for...
Yeah, why not? I mean, yeah. In the case of Hungary, you know, it, in some ways it almost was a club team because they were all together at Honved.
Yeah.
But yeah, Bayern Munich and West Germany is a big crossover. Ajax and the Netherlands is a big crossover.
Right.
Barcelona and Spain is a big crossover. So I think it's fair enough to include those.
Okay.
So yeah, they were the 6 I came up with.
All right. Sid.
Brazil 70.
Yeah.
Sorry, it was Brazil.
Oh, right. Yeah, fair enough.
Brazil.
Hey, how
good
about that Barcelona shirt sponsorship thing? Has that provoked much comment, outrage, etc.?
Yes, it has. One or two banners in the Camp Nou last night, one of which was based on a pun based on Qatar and the word acataremos, in other words, we will accept, and the phrase was, we will not accept your decision. Some of the Barcelona fans are very, very annoyed because there's a belief that this kind of, if you like, contradicts a kind of moral superiority that Barcelona tried to maintain, the whole discourse and narrative of being more than a club, and that somehow this goes against that. There are so many, there are so many caveats to this. There are so many different areas where you can pick this up. But I do think that there's been something fundamentally missed in this a little bit. And the assumption, there's one basic remark that a lot of people have said, or at least it seems this way to me, and that is that, well, hang on, how can a charity, how can a foundation, a non-profit foundation, pay Barcelona, €165 million over 5 years in total? Well, the short answer is it's not really a charity like all others. It's essentially a charity that's linked to a state, and a state which is involved in all sorts of vanity projects. And I don't necessarily think that it should be seen as something deeply sinister. It should maybe be seen as something, and I'm always reminded of the Simpsons episode where Monty Burns decides he's the richest man in the world, but no one loves him, so he's got to do something to get everyone to love him. And there's an element of that with the Qatari state, I think.
Is it not an element then, if they're giving the money out like this, that actually Barcelona are therefore the beneficiaries of charity? I mean, in Qatar, are there adverts on TV at the moment with Lionel Messi sitting on the floor with his hands out and them saying, you know, for just £100,000 you can buy this boy a golden ring.
Yeah.
And
well, there's an element of that. I think from what I've looked into this, and admittedly it's not a huge amount, the Qatar Foundation is essentially part of a Qatari drive, and this is something I was made very aware of when I was there in 5 or 6 weeks ago, looking at their World Cup stadiums and stuff. But there's a belief, there seems to be a belief in Qatar that they're trying very hard, as I don't know whether to say this as a state or as a ruling dynasty, or I'm not really, really sure exactly where you would define what Qatar is. But they're trying very hard to be more than just a place with lots of oil, to try and create a sense of national identity which doesn't really exist at the moment.
Qatar, more than a country.
Sorry?
Is there any chance they might simply move the club to Qatar, MK Don style? And I mean, it's a hotbed of football. They've got a World Cup.
Yeah.
I mean, it could be a solution to
the
debt
problem.
The next
logical step for money in football is that just eventually, instead of, you know, having a European Super League, we just relocate all the big teams to
the Emirates.
Places with more money. Yeah.
Well, is not the Premier League's 39th game a first step towards that?
Probably, yeah.
Right. Weren't her words said against
any
that?
Any views on that, James?
Yeah, I think anything that takes this tremendous sporting model to the hungry fans out there, it can only be a good thing.
We've got great product.
I don't call it product, Barney.
No.
Can you call emotions product?
Anyway.
Can you call? Sorry. Anyway, Sid, listen. Sorry. Thanks for your patience. One last thing, unless you've got anything else you want to throw our way, Sid. Sergio Canales, West Ham or Bolton? Sid.
Neither.
Oh.
I think Canales is in a situation which he's not playing anything like as much as he would like. He's not developing as quickly as Jose Mourinho would like. But Mourinho's been quite clear. Now of course, this may change, and I'll explain why in a second. But the bottom line is that Mourinho's been quite clear that he basically doesn't trust anyone else with Canales' development. He believes that Real Madrid is the best place for Canales to improve, even if it's not playing a huge amount of games. He believes that, for example, the option of Canales going back to Racing Santander for a bit was mooted, and that's very much one of the reasons why Racing sold Canales to Real Madrid in the first place, because they thought, well, if there's ever a chance of him coming back or finishing his development, he'll do it here and we'll be well placed for it. Actually, that particular move rebounded on them a little bit because Mourinho thinks that the best place for him to improve is at Real Madrid. Now, the reason I say it's not entirely clear-cut is there are one or two people within the club at directorial level rather than at the sporting level who would rather that Canales did go on loan somewhere, and they would rather that he went and played somewhere. Mourinho, as it stands, is against that because Mourinho thinks he will be a better player if Mourinho can work with him than if, any number of other clubs can work with him.
Jonathan, Estudiantes.
Yes, wrapped up the Apertura title in Argentina last night with a 2-0 win over Arsenal. It was reasonable. I mean, they were 2 points clear of Vélez going into the final set of games. Although this being Argentina, the final set of games actually hasn't finished yet. But they were the two who were in contention for the title. They were playing last night. Vélez went ahead very early and until a quarter of an hour from time looked like heading for the playoff, and Hernan Lopez scored twice in the last 16 minutes, I think, for Estudiantes. And I think a title they deserve. They've been the best team for quite a while. I think, you know, Veron was saying this is a 5-year golden age for Estudiantes, in which they've only picked up two titles under Libertadores. But I think he's right. I think they have been the best team over that 5-year period.
Brilliant. Fair enough. In Italy, erstwhile home of said Argentine midfield maestro. What's happening there? Let's see. Milan are 6 points clear of Juventus, Lazio and Napoli, Paolo.
Yeah. Well, you begin to fear already that perhaps we will have a one-horse race this year in Serie A after all, because Milan are playing very well at the moment. But I mean, I think it's a really interesting sort of mix behind them. You've got Lazio, Napoli and Juve are all playing well at the moment. Obviously, Juve beat Lazio last night. It was the last minute of four of injury time when they nicked the winner. So that was a very, you know, it was a close game, actually. I think in many ways it told you that Lazio very much can be involved in this race at the end, because actually they played very well, even though they didn't win it and they didn't even get a result out of it in the end.
I thought it was a slightly disappointing game, actually. I was expecting more from...
It started very brightly. Obviously, it started very brightly. Both goals came very... Well, both the you know, each team scored very early on. It sort of had that sort of sparkle to it early on. I thought that Juventus carried the greater threat. I thought that Juventus had more going forward. I was just talking, we had a brief interim pause here on the pod, and I was just talking to Jonathan about Milos Krasic, who obviously, effectively, I think it's an own goal really, but he sort of got the winning goal because he cut in down the outside and then knocked it across and Muslera pushed it into his own net. But you know, I think he sort of constantly looked threatening down the right, and he was giving Cavander, who was the replacement fullback for Lazio, he was giving him trouble, but at the same time not always looking like he was going to provide the final ball that Juventus needed. And you had sort of other players giving sort of similarly intermittent performances. Like you had Aquilani started the game very brightly, put in a couple of really nice set pieces, but then he disappeared a little bit in the second half. So I thought this one, there were lots of good things, but I don't think that it was necessarily a sparkling game all the way through.
Can I ask why they're both wearing their away kits? Why were Juve wearing white and Lazio wearing dark green?
Juventus have three kits this season, and that white kit with the tricolore on it, with the you know, the green, white and red on it, is it's being used as their home kit as well. So they're sort of they're using two home kits. It's all to do with sponsorships because they have different sponsors. Yes, they have a one which is worn in at nighttime games and one which is worn in daytime games.
It's more visible as well because it's just white.
Isn't that just a shameful farce? Isn't that a disgrace, a betrayal of tradition? Isn't that just a sign of where football's going wrong?
You very much could argue that. It is all about sponsorship, yeah, because they've got different sponsors.
And then the perception was that white and pale blue are too similar to...
Well, I have no idea why Lazio... I think Lazio...
They're wearing black shirts. Why would Lazio
be in black shirts? Dark green.
It wasn't black, yeah. Black and it's hideous, I thought. But there you go. But anyway, it was an interesting game. Earlier on, Milan, very impressive. They blew Bologna away. Kevin Prince-Boateng now playing in the
hole
behind
the
attack.
What an opening goal.
Do you know what? He is looking very good. He had a couple of really important contributions there because obviously he scored the first goal and he set up the second. But I do think that actually, again, the man who really you have to take your hat off to was Ibrahimovic. Yeah. That finish was for Boateng was only possible because Ibrahimovic was, again, actually working for the team as well. Yeah. Not just but being the soloist that he's made out to be and often is.
But the accuracy as well of that ball in. Moving along... Rich versus World says, why isn't anyone talking about the proposed transfer of Kenny Miller to AC Milan? I'm well aware, says Rich versus World, that the Scottish League isn't up to much these days, but he's the fifth most efficient attacking player in the world this season. But what would that be based on? Rich versus World doesn't explain.
Maybe he's a robot and you can just measure his efficiency.
All right. Jonathan, any help? Can
I'd
you
be
think of any way? Yeah, okay. Maybe Rich versus World is playing a joke on us.
Well, I've heard the rumours, but I'd nonetheless be staggered.
Oh, what, Kenny Miller to Milan?
Yeah.
Well, they have made some funny signings, have Milan, but that would be...
It would be a terrible indictment of Serie A, a player who kind of did all right but not brilliantly at Wolves.
But isn't that sort of the way you look at Gattuso, sort of had an all right but not setting the world alike career in the SPL, and now he's come back to Milan and had a good number of successful years.
I'm not sure you could characterise...
How old was he when he left the SPL?
Yeah, that's true.
I think he was pretty... I don't think he was a disappointment.
It's not like
they loved him.
Gattuso would... Yeah, exactly. A, he'd been successful. B, he hadn't had disastrous spells at Derby and pretty unimpressive ones at Wolves.
Yeah, I don't think Kenny Miller's going to Milan, by the way. I didn't mean to validate that point.
All right, then. Junko Partner says, news from Azerbaijan regarding Tony Adams. You're probably all over this, Johnson. Are you?
I read the very good interview in the Mail, I think, with Adams the weekend.
All right. He's Gabala FC. Is that how I say that? Gabala FC?
Yeah, I think it's slightly harder. Kabala, but I mean...
Kabala. Yeah. Okay. Sit fifth in the 12-team Azerbaijan League. They've gone 11 games unbeaten. They haven't conceded a goal in 10 games. All right. Good. They've signed ex-Sheffield Wednesday striker Dion Burton and got their eye on former United forward Luton Shelton. This was all in that interview, was it?
Adams came across... very well. The photographs are astonishing, just how run down the town is, how run down the stadium and everything is. And Adam's talking about things like finding glass on the pitch, finding kind of these iron spikes on the pitch and things. And
they must have some
iron
money,
spikes.
They've got huge amounts of money. It was by the they were putting in new floodlight pylons and had these spikes to mount the pylons on. They were just sort of sticking out the ground by the side of the pitch. And Adam kicked up a fuss and was seen as being some kind of terrible Western something.
He also had a go at the bear that was being starved for entertainment in a local cafe, didn't he?
I don't think he had a go at the bear.
He had a go at the practice, which is good. Yeah. I mean, he should stand up for what he believes in.
Tony Adams been feeding the bear?
I don't know if he fed the
bear. It's a lovely image. Signing Luton Shelton, by the way,
is that feeding the bear?
It's quite an ambitious... I mean, Luton Shelton is currently the best player in Norway. He's doing very well.
All right.
Yeah, it's quite an ambitious move.
Is he as good as Kenny Miller? Well, he's the fifth most efficient attacking player in the world.
Do you think it might be a Luther Blissett situation? They might have mistaken Kenny Miller for someone.
Right. Yeah, they're very possible.
For who?
I don't know.
Kay Dalglish?
Part three, any other Premier League business. Barney, you enjoyed the raw drama that was Fulham Sunderland.
Yeah, it was an interesting afternoon.
No, it wasn't.
There was some nice cloud formations above the stand, and
right.
I had a vegetable pie rather than a beef one.
Right,
and talked to the person sitting next to me for a bit, and then suddenly the game was over.
Right,
I mean it was very boring.
Okay,
not much.
I've got lots of interesting stats about that. Let's see stats. Yeah, right. The 10 draws in 17 matches.
Yeah, it's a Premier League record equaling.
All right, here's another one. Fulham's team
was the oldest in the Premier League.
This season, oldest average age in the Premier League this season. Sunderland's
was the youngest.
And, how extraordinary is that? I can't believe this isn't in part one. Let's put this in part one, then. You can jiggery and pokery.
It was good to see David Mailer back after his injury, because yeah. I thought he was magnificent.
He went off after...
yeah, but his first game back in 6 months, I mean, that's fair enough.
Sorry, we don't have to talk about this.
Yeah, he was all right. The two of them in central midfield, him and Catamol, was quite a, you know, quite a force. I mean, they did in the first half, they were going to run over Fulham a bit, because they're big, strong boys, and Danny Murphy and the like didn't really look up for it. But Fulham had what pressure there was in the second half. Sunderland, a very young team, they looked tired, and Steve Bruce was really pleased to get out there with a point. And
all right, excellent. I'm quite pleased to get out of that and move on to...
I could talk some more about it. Jordan Henderson was playing.
How about
right.
Bolton? How about Bolton, eh?
Yeah,
they go a man down, they score goals. It's what they do. It's all they do.
They're certainly a changed team from the Bolton we might have seen.
Although, that last Bolton goal.
There was no certain irony to that. You know, you got Sam Allardyce back there, who actually, you know, slightly unfairly criticised for his time at Bolton as having just been a long ball merchant. They obviously were a bit more than that under him. But, yeah, so criticised being a long ball merchant. Supposedly, Owen Coyle, the man who, you know, plays much more expansive football, and the decisive goal comes from a hoof down the middle.
But that was a wonderful long ball goal. That was classic. It was great product down the middle. Lovely flick on from the big man and bombing on from the midfield. It's just classic long ball.
Holden's been very good this season. He's really improved, I think, last year. Great finish.
Excellent. But, do you know, Paolo, did you know this? you say what you wanted to say.
Well, I wouldn't say really wasn't very good, but I was just going to say, how come Owen Coyle is still wearing shorts?
I'm so glad you raised that. It's because he's, you know, a man's man, a footballer's footballer.
It's funny, my five-year-old son was watching this game with me. Obviously, he insisted on watching it, and he saw Owen Coyle in shorts and said, "That man looks silly. He doesn't look like a footballer."
Really?
Yeah.
He's from Scotland, of course.
Does Sam Allardyce look like a footballer in his suit?
He was happier with Sam Allardyce. He said, "Is he the king?"
Is your son available on Thursday?
Yeah, no, sorry, it's descending into children say the funniest things. But he did say a good thing about the Premier League trophy when they flash it up.
Oh, yeah.
He said, "The teapot's wearing a crown."
Indeed,
which
it
I thought
is.
Was a really
indeed
good summation of what the Premier League is and what it stands for and what it will always be.
There's something tasty brewing inside it.
The teapot's wearing a crown.
Yeah,
but I think Owen Coyle's a very hugely impressive man. I mean, he plays very, very impressive football. He has great results.
Right.
He's very calm, very coherent in press conferences. He's very considered in what he says. Apart from the shorts thing, it's like all his managerial bonkersness is in his choice of leg wear.
Sure, I'm not that upset about it. He went through it. He didn't look unnatural.
No, it's a good way to
challenging
get it
the
out
way
there
that Steve McLaren did in his shorts. But here's my stat anyway. Bolton have scored a goal in the 88th minute or later in five of their last six Premier League home games. How about that, eh? So if you're a goal up against Bolton and you're in the 88th minute, it's time to look up.
You know what that is? It's because by that stage they get desperate. They think, well, maybe we'll give it a go with a long ball. And it turns out they're actually really good at that.
Right.
Well, I bet they score late against Sunderland next week. Sunderland let in a ridiculous number of late goals this season. I think it's 11 points Sunderland have dropped from in the last 10 minutes.
Ouch.
Got two back against Sunderland. I mean, it's Arsenal. One back against Arsenal.
Yeah, and they did get a late win against City, but still.
They're interesting games next weekend. And also Liverpool against Fulham. It'd be interesting to see if Roy Hodgson's saying if we had to get beaten 3-0 by any team, I'm glad it was Fulham. And Chelsea will be playing Man United, but we'll be addressing all those, of course, on Thursday. And Aston Villa, who also enjoyed a meeting with their neighbours against West Brom, won without impressing, is that fair?
I mean, I just saw highlights of the game, but I did enjoy the winning goal from Emil Heskey.
Right.
Which just hit him on the head.
Yes.
And it was a brilliant instinctive finish. And
he put his head in the right position, and let's be fair, it wasn't a natural position.
Yeah, well, you've got to be there to...
He was kneeling down, apparently kind of mid-prayer at the back post when the ball...
If Chicharito had done that, we'd all be raving about it.
Instinctive, yeah.
Apparently Richard Dunn was stripped of his captaincy after complaining about training. And dropped as well. Julio's banned mobile phones. The Julio, you remember, had the issues about, you know, trapped air misery and all that in training. He's banned mobile phones and is looking to where players live amid concerns that many of his squad are travelling too far to play and train. It sounds like they might be, actually. Stephen Warnock apparently is in Liverpool still. But I find that very strange when players live in one city and
well, it just shows they haven't got enough to do with their time if they kind of actively encouraging a long commute.
Yeah, but it's not good for you, is it?
Well, I don't know. If he's kind of in some nice kind of chauffeur-driven car and he kind of spends his time reading improving books, and I think that's a very good thing. But
all right.
I suspect that's not what he's doing.
All right. Okay, but a big win for Villa. That was only their second win in, thinks hard, I think it's their second win in 11 games. Mm. Anyway, that's it for Football Weekly. We return refreshed and revitalised on Thursday to preview what is clearly going to be another very, very exciting round of matches, not only in the Premier League, but also abroad. Do join us for that. In the meantime, many thanks to producer Ben, Barney Rone, Paolo Bandini and Jonathan Wilson. Jonathan, are we seeing you before you when you go off to Argentina again?
I think I'm in next Monday before
again,
and I fly back next Monday. I'm Barry's replacement today. I've stepped in for
clearly
for the Irishman.
Yeah, absolutely.
A like for like replacement.
I don't know. He should be more insulted by that.
No.
I know one of us is possibly
involved,
both.
No insult
involved, Jonathan. Good.
Are we intentionally not discussing Man United Arsenal because it kicks off probably when people are downloading this?
That's right. That's right. What's your prediction then, Paolo?
Doom for Arsenal, as
oh,
always.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think United will win.
United 1, training ground 0.
Quite.
Mm. Oh, well. We'll have the verdict on that, of course, in Thursday. We'll see you then.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.